music for libraries and lava lamps. It's radio like you haven't heard for decades. Lo-fi and low-key, it's the Radio Thrift Shop with DJ Frederick. Well, hello and welcome to the Thrift Shop. I'm DJ Frederick, and today we're going to have a Thrift Shop library music show. Now, just what is library music? It's also known as production music, and it's music created mainly for video, TV shows, movies, advertising, and more. It's not written for specific visuals, but instead to inspire a mood. Library music has a long history that stretches back to 1927, when the DeWolf Company began making 78s for radio use. So today, it's the Thrift Shop Library Show. And we're going to listen to all kinds of cool music that's going to just delight your ears. ¶¶ tunes from the Black Fire LP, we heard Corking and Cream. And before that, we heard the Baragozi Group with Lilac Arms. Well, this is DJ Frederick. You're tuned to the Radio Thrift Shop, and this is the Thrift Shop Library Show. Now, library records were first composed for use in film, television, and radio production as stock music, cues, and effects that could be licensed, more often as a way to save on costs of an expensive original score. Now, library music would be written for specific moods, emotions, or vague activity that would be expressed on the screen and through the music. And as with any sprawling bracket of music, library music has its own fair share of strange nooks and niches, too. And we're about to explore one of them. A 6-minute, 7-inch vinyl 33 RPM record promoting Eastern Airlines. It's the music of Eastern Airlines from 1968.
Thank you. Exploring Science and the Sea. The pistol shrimp has terrible eyesight, but some species of the shrimp get help. Not spectacles, but a companion fish, a goby. It keeps an eye out for predators. In turn, the shrimp maintains a burrow that's used by both of them. The pistol shrimp gets its name from one of its claws, which is larger than the other. It snaps the claw shut quickly, generating bubbles. When the bubbles collapse, they produce a loud sound, like a gunshot. That can stun prey and allow the shrimp to communicate with other shrimp around it. The problem for the pistol shrimp is that it can't see predators coming, so it teams up with the goby, a small fish with an elongated body. The shrimp digs a burrow in the sand and keeps the burrow clean. During the day, it comes out of the burrow to find food, and that's where the goby comes in. It has excellent vision, so it acts as a lookout. It stays close to the burrow, where the shrimp can touch it with one or both of its antennae. If the fish sees danger, it can wiggle its fins or body to warn the shrimp, or dart into the burrow. Alerted to the threat, the shrimp ducks into the burrow too. And at night, both creatures stay inside the burrow, which the shrimp may barricade with bits of coral or other debris. Biologists aren't sure just who initiates the partnership, but they do know that shrimp and gobies may form a team when both are juveniles, then stay together into adulthood. A long-lasting partnership that helps keep both of them safe. Science in the Sea is a production of the University of Texas Marine Science Institute and is on the web at scienceandthesea.org. I'm Holly Brawley.
And thank you, Holly. Following up with the music of Eastern Airlines. Oh boy, I'm going to go off on a tangent here. By the way, this is DJ Frederick. You're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop, and this is the Thrift Shop Library Music Hour. Okay, we're going to hear the WPVI Action News theme, Move Closer to Your World, from WPVI-TV6 in Philadelphia. Okay, you heard it here first, or last. The TV6 WPVI action news theme from Philadelphia. That was the bootleg disco version.
Thank you.
Alan Hawkshaw with Soul Organ, and before that, the Gary Pacific Orchestra and Soft Wind. Well, this is DJ Frederick. You're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop, and this is the Thrift Shop Library Hour. Now, freeform radio has almost disappeared from the airwaves, and for folks who've been listening over the past to Seldom Heard Radio and Radio Thrift Shop, thank you for your support. On the Thrift Shop, you'll hear folk, jazz, easy listening, indie pop, indie rock, and more. Music from your grandparents' attic, and music that hasn't been released yet. We're stepping into the days of futures past on the Radio Thrift Shop. We're going to take a quick break and check in with Laura Erickson's For the Birds.
In October 2018, I received an email from Luke Safford asking me to be the keynote speaker at the 2019 Southeast Arizona Birding Festival. I was thrilled beyond compare, and for the past 10 months, I've been floating on high with anticipation. Last week was the actual event, and it was even more wonderful than I'd anticipated. I arrived in Tucson on Wednesday, August 7th, about noon. A birder named Jenny McFarland picked me up at the airport, and during our drive, she told me a bit about her work with the southwestern population of yellow-billed cuckoos. When I ran into a group of three loud cuckoos on our first field trip, I, of course, sought out Jenny to tell her all about it. Wednesday evening, I got to meet lots more people from Tucson and beyond at the social hour, and then I went to bed early so I could be up for my morning field trip to Walker Canyon, an infrequently birded area very close to Nogales and the Mexican border. I was ostensibly a field trip co-leader, but since I live in Minnesota and have birded this area of Arizona only four times before, I was actually just along for color commentary. Our real leader was Tim Helencharis, who loves birding in out-of-the-way places few other birders check out. We were hoping for a lot of Mexican specialties, and the trip did not disappoint. I got my first photos of an elegant trogon ever when a female posed not too terribly far away. I also got a great look at a varied bunting flying by too quickly for me to photograph, but did take a few photos of a young gray hawk. The next day, Friday, my group headed for the famous Madera Canyon, one of the most popular birding canyons in the state. We started out trying to get some lowland desert sparrows like rufous-winged, black-throated, cassins, and botteries. My ears are not what they used to be, but I did manage to hear the cassins and botteries both. A varied bunting was more cooperative, singing persistently from an exposed perch. We weren't very close, but I did get some marginal recordings and photos, which was thrilling because I've seen this gorgeous desert species only once before in my life. When we got up to the Madera Canyon picnic ground, we had good views and photo ops of a male elegant trogon, and I got photos of a second in the trees behind the Santa Rita Lodge feeding station. That's also where I got lots of photos of broad-billed hummingbirds and a few photos of one Rivoli's hummingbird. That night, we took a field trip back to Madera for some owling. Sunday was my final field trip, this time up Mount Lemmon to the town called Summer Haven, at such an elevation that it's cool up there even when Tucson is over 100 degrees. We had some excellent warblers, Virginia's Hermit, Olive, and Red-Faced Warbler, and Painted Redstart. Broad-tailed hummingbirds dominated at this feeding station. We also had some very quick looks at what is now called the Blue-Throated Mountain Gem. My total for the 4 days of birding was 90 species of birds, along with some really cool other animals. Festivals are a great initiation into a new area for learning the ins and outs of some of the best birding spots. meeting great people, spending time in the field with experienced leaders, and spending time at festival headquarters learning about important conservation efforts to ensure that all the wonderful wildlife of that region will continue to thrive well into the future are the kinds of advantages a good birding festival provides. It was so inspirational that now I'm planning a road trip back there with Russ for next April. Then I can do the kind of low-key, independent birding I also love, spending the kind of quality time watching, recording, and photographing individual birds that the logistics of festival field trips simply don't allow. Attending birding festivals and getting out on my own are both wonderful in their own ways, and I love living in the best of both worlds. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.
Thank you.
music that would be right at home on a reel-to-reel. That was the Alan Copeland Singers with Baroque a Nova. Before that, Funky Chimes, and we started off with the Dave Pell Singers, O Calcutta. Well, this is DJ Frederick. You're tuned to the Radio Thrift Shop. This is the Thrift Shop Library Hour.
Here's a program from our archives. We're listening to the summer serenade of a tiger moth, slowed down 30 times so that we can hear it. I'm Jim Metzner, and this is the pulse of the planet.
In the summer, this is their prime mating time. The males and females are finding each other. And they do that chemically, for the most part. But what we've discovered is that they also use sound to communicate.
Bill Connor is a professor of biology at Wake Forest University in North Carolina. He tells us that some species of tiger moths use sound to help locate a mate.
In some special species, the female starts the mating system by releasing a pheromone. When the male detects the pheromone, he clicks. Then the female responds with clicks, and they click back and forth and back and forth. It's like acoustic fireflies. They get closer and closer together, and then finally they make lots and lots of noise, and they mate.
How can you tell whether the moth is responding to a sound or a smell? Well, by observing its behavior.
One way to determine if a moth is responding to a pheromone, a chemical signal, versus an acoustic one, is the way in which the moth approaches the source. With a chemical signal, it will always approach from the downwind direction, picking up the scent molecules and moving upwind. With a sound source, it need not approach just from downwind, but it can approach from any direction.
Scientists still aren't sure why it is that some moths use chemical cues while others use sound to find a mate. We've been listening to a program from our archives. If you want to hear more, check out our podcast. I'm Jim Metzner, and this is The Pulse of the Planet.
And I'm DJ Frederick. You're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop. So please stay tuned as we work toward 500 episodes of the Radio Thrift Shop. I'm going to be bringing you the Forgotten 45 show, the Betamax bin, and a new show called Improve Your Attention Span, where most of the songs are going to clock in at over 10 minutes. So please stay tuned for that. Right now, a couple more library tunes here on the Radio Thrift Shop.
Thank you.
Couple of tunes from the Akata A LP. We heard In Biafra and In a Yellow Park. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Radio Thrift Shop, celebrating the past century of recorded sound on the radio. Getting back into the swing of things as I move toward 500 programs of the Radio Thrift Shop. I hope you have enjoyed listening, and wherever you're listening from on the planet, remember, take good care of yourself, take good care of your community, and take good care of those you love.